You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The World Health Organization said last month that the coronavirus could become epidemic, like HIV. The WHO warned against any attempt to predict how long it would keep circulating and called for a massive effort to counter COVID-19. What is it like to be HIV positive during a global health crisis? What are lessons carried over from the AIDS crisis of the 80s and 90s? Your experiences, your questions, they're welcome. 800-642-1234. Mike Gifford is president and CEO of Vivant Health, formerly known as the AIDS Resource Center of Wisconsin, providing prevention and treatment for 20 years. Mike, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
It's great to be with you, Kate. I hope you're doing well this morning.
I am. Same to you. Mike, you have served people in 15 different locations across four states. What changes have you made to your operations in the wake of COVID-19?
Before we talk about the changes that we've made, I want to just share with the listeners what we haven't changed, and that is Vivant's four-decade-long commitment to equality as we serve people that sadly are too often pushed to the edges of our society. You know, your introductory comments about how HIV and the COVID-19 pandemic are similar are really timely, and it goes beyond the infectious nature of the disease and the large reach of the diseases to who is greatly impacted. And we know that the racism that has been highlighted by the murder of George Floyd is one of those contributing factors that really fuels both the COVID-19 and the HIV pandemic. So we have not changed our decades-long commitment to assuring everybody receives the care they need, regardless of who they love, the color of their skin, or how much money or how little money they have. What we have changed is how we provide those services. We've done that to protect our patients and our clients and certainly our staff, although we don't call them staff. We have champions at Vivant, and we've done that by having about 90% of our champions work from home, rely on new telehealth technology that assures access to medical care, mental health services. We've completely redesigned how we operate our pharmacy and our food pantry to assure home delivery so that our patients and clients can safely stay home and not have to venture out to get life-saving medication and food. And we've reconstructed our prevention programs to do things like provide testing in people's homes rather than requiring them to come to the facility. So while we've morphed a lot of what we do to meet the needs of our patients and clients, 10,000 of them all over the country, and what we haven't done is stray from our longtime commitment to ensure that we are fighting for fairness and justice and equality and working to overcome things like racism that fuel the HIV epidemic.
Mike, let's look at a piece of that equation, because certainly getting the medications and staying on a strict regimen of medications is really important. How are you getting those prescriptions out?
Right now, we are operating four pharmacies around the country, and those prescriptions, about half of our pharmacy staff are in the pharmacy, about half of our pharmacy staff are at home, making sure that prescriptions are getting filled, the right information's available, contacting physicians' offices, all those sorts of things. And last week, 99.5% of our prescriptions were home delivered. And that may be a courier that brings it across town from our Madison pharmacy. It may be an overnight delivery company that would offer up that delivery into rural or greater Wisconsin. But it's, you know, one of the key things, Kate, on this has been the way that we have really prioritized staying in contact with our patients and clients. I think we've done that in a way that no other healthcare organization in the country has. And what we've done is make a commitment that every week we will call every one of our patients and clients to make sure they're okay. A big part of that is to make sure they have the medications they need.
We're talking with Mike Gifford, CEO of Vivant Health. You can join in. Are you monitoring your health during this time and you're HIV positive? What concerns you? What questions have you raised? And how have you talked with your healthcare provider at this time? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Mike, as you are in contact with your clients, how is telehealth working for you? And what has that conversion been like?
You know, the telehealth conversion has been something that we've been working on for a number of years, and which is very well positioned to dramatically expand. Got to share with you a funny story. When we started this a number of years ago, Kate, it was in our mental health program, and it was telepsychiatry, and we apparently didn't communicate quite right with the first patient who drove from from Green Bay down to Milwaukee for his telehealth appointment. Not realizing that all he had to do was call.
Oh dear!
It's one of those examples where you know you have to work out the bugs as you move forward. But right now, 100% of our mental health therapy is happening via telehealth. Obviously, with all of the precautions in place, assuring compliance with confidentiality, tips, and those sorts of things. But what it's fueled by is a very powerful electronic health record that we use, Epic. We're very grateful we have that tool that allows for much easier communication with our patients and clients, and a real dedication of our champions to almost instantaneously go from a model where they're seeing patients across the exam room or across the mental health therapy room, certainly closer than 6 feet, right back prior to COVID-19, almost instantaneously, literally 48 hours later, to seeing 100% of their patients via telehealth. So the system's been very powerful, but our champions and their response has been equally powerful.
How are people... go ahead.
I was just going to say, sadly, the developments related to George Floyd's murder has really complicated the mental health provision that we provide, as so many people are struggling with the outgrowth of that and the racism that is wrapped in that. But we're certainly here to help our patients and clients through that also.
Mike, a medical question here. How do people who are living with HIV, are they more at risk when it comes to the coronavirus?
You know, I would say the jury's still out on that, Kate. The reality is that if you're living with HIV and you aren't getting access to medical care and you're not getting access to medication, you have a compromised immune system, there's no doubt that you're at greater risk if you contract HIV. We know, sadly, that people with HIV have a number of other underlying health conditions, including those that contribute to complications related to COVID-19. And we know that the HIV population is aging, with more than half of people living with HIV over 50 years old at this point. So they are certainly on all of those categories that place them at higher risk for COVID. We certainly have been monitoring that, providing testing to our patients and clients. And thankfully, at this point, all of our patients that have tested positive for COVID-19 have recovered. And I think that has a lot to do with this integrated care model that Vivant Health is still well known for, taking care of all of healthcare needs, but then also those social determinants of health that our patients and clients need so that they can be successful and healthy.
We have Vivant Health CEO Mike Gifford as we talk about living with HIV amid the pandemic. What questions do you have about the spread of HIV and complications? Are you familiar with PrEP? Do you take an HIV prevention medication? Are you getting it delivered to your home? Are you able to safely access your health care? Be part of this. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Mike Gifford right here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about living with HIV amid the pandemic. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And I want to take a moment to remember Larry Kramer, the prominent AIDS activist who died 1 week ago from pneumonia at age 84. His AIDS activism, calling out the federal government as HIV spread throughout the U.S. and the world in the 80s, that is relevant today as we face another epic health crisis. Did you work in healthcare during the AIDS crisis and see it unfold before you? What insights can you draw from those experiences decades ago? We're at 800-642-1234. We have Mike Gifford with us, CEO of Vivant Health. Mike, let's reflect on the legacy of Larry Kramer. What did he mean to activism?
For AIDS activism, Larry meant everything, right? It's almost difficult for us to remember those times in the early 80s, but it was a time where people just weren't talking about HIV, right? And denying it or blaming the gay community. And Larry just cut through all of that with powerful activism, really, really teaching so many of us what it really meant to effectively fight for your life. And he obviously did that very, very well for a number of years. And you know, there's such parallels between that and COVID pandemic, and certainly the racism that is highlighted in the news today. Back in the early days of HIV, the rallying cry is silence equals death. And it was a time when our government wasn't acting and wasn't talking about HIV and AIDS, and HIV was rapidly spreading, much like happened in January and February in the COVID pandemic. And you know, now certainly the rallying cry, the activism cry that white silence is violence in the fight against racism. There's so many parallels, and whether it's HIV or COVID or racism, we just need as a society not to be silent. We need to strongly advocate for the fair, just, equitable treatment, inclusion of all people.
When you look back at the AIDS crisis in those years, what lessons were learned in public health?
It's lessons that are being implemented today in the COVID-19 crisis. You know, people like Dr. Debbie Birx and Dr. Tony Fauci, who we've become commonplace on our monitors and on our phones and on our TV screens, did all of their career work in the fight against HIV, right? So easy access to testing, overcoming stigma associated with testing positive, contact tracing, all of those sorts of things really grew out of the HIV epidemic. And candidly, without people like Debbie Birx and Tony Fauci helping to lead the national response, we'd be in a far, far worse place than we are as we're knocking on the door of almost 2 million COVID positive cases diagnosed here in our country.
We're talking with Mike Gifford, who's president of Vivant Health, and you can join in. What questions do you have about the spread of HIV? What parallels do you see from the AIDS crisis in the 80s? Do you work in healthcare now, and did you back then? What can you draw from that? Do you take an HIV prevention medication? How is it going now? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at wpr.org. Mike, from a practical standpoint, how can people who are living with HIV protect themselves while they venture out of their homes, while they go about living their life right now?
You know, the great thing for people with HIV is that they have a chance to live a long and healthy life. If they pass what we call the GIFS test, if they're diagnosed, right, 1 in 6 people living with HIV aren't diagnosed. If they get into care, sadly, 1 in 5 people with HIV don't get into medical care. If they see a high-quality physician who knows how to provide treatment, if they get access to medication, and if they take those medications correctly every day for the rest of their lives, if that all happens, they can regain and sustain their health so that the precautions for them going out and about in the community during the COVID-19 pandemic are the same for people who are not living with HIV. It's when people don't have access to treatment, don't have what's called an undetectable viral load, which simply means your HIV is treated as best as possible. That's when extra precautions need to be taken.
Let's look at funding and budget. We've seen many healthcare organizations and hospitals struggling to stay afloat. What does your budget line look like?
You know, we're so grateful that we have not had to curtail any services for patients and clients for financial reasons. The generosity of the community has been tremendous in private donations, extra donations in response to the COVID pandemic. And we know that our challenges and the needs of people we serve are greater now than ever before. We are serving 25% more people through our food pantry. The amount of rent assistance that people have requested is up by about 20%. And those are just embedded in the basic truths that if you're living with HIV and you're hungry, you're probably more likely to seek out food than medicine. And if you're homeless, you're more likely to seek out shelter than a doctor's appointment. So we're trying to meet those basic needs, and those basic needs are growing substantially for us. And that's where the generosity of the community, we'll continue to rely on that. We need people's help. They can help us by going to thriveandhealth.org and making a donation. But at this point, we've been able to meet that need. The challenge is how much more lies ahead for us, and that's where we need people to continue to step up.
You're from an interesting vantage point because you work across multiple states. I'm wondering if you see variations right now in the approach and the you know, what your clients are and patients are facing in other states.
Certainly, there's substantial variation when we look at where we're operating. We have offices and clinics in Wisconsin and in Colorado and in Missouri and in Texas. And there are variations, I think, really fall along a couple different lines. One, we have to acknowledge that healthcare in those four states is dramatically different. As an example, the Medicaid program in Wisconsin is much more comprehensive than the Medicaid program is in Texas. The Medicaid program in Wisconsin helps make sure that people get access to basic care. Can't say that for other states around the country. So that that is sort of a foundation from which we work. Big challenge in states like Texas that have opened up so quickly, and really a substantial fear that patients have about what that means for their health risk. And then certainly fear and concern about the protests and the civil unrest that we're also trying to help patients and clients cope with, that is much more significant in a state like Wisconsin than it has been in a city like Austin. St. Louis and Denver have also seen their protests that really are concerning to our patients and clients also. Not protests, the civil unrest.
Civil unrest.
Yeah, I apologize.
Not to overlook Pride Month, celebrated in June each year. Last year marked the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall riots. How should we be thinking about this month when we can't gather?
Yeah, it's COVID-19 has taken so much from us, right? Whether it's your child's high school graduation or a child's prom or the chance for us to work and interact in the office or even be with friends, right? And we have to make sure that it doesn't steal the pride celebration for us. And we need to, even in these very difficult, dark times, celebrate. And, you know, one of the ways that I think we need to celebrate is remembering how intertwined the pride movement and civil rights movements are, right? These are not separate, distinct, siloed situations. We know that there's great African-American leaders in the LGBT movement, great LGBT leaders in the African-American civil rights movement. And in that, we need to pause, we need to celebrate, and we need to roll up our sleeves and continue the fight for justice and equality.
Quickly here, Vivint runs the LifePoint Needle Exchange Program. Do you have concerns right now surrounding drug use since the pandemic began?
The ability to continue the LifePoint Needle Exchange Program throughout Wisconsin has been really central to our response to the COVID pandemic, and we're grateful that we're reaching virtually the same number of people through that program. The opioid epidemic is exploding and continues to explode in Wisconsin, and that could be a great topic to come back and spend a whole program on. I'd be happy to do that.
Well, Mike, thank you so much for joining us, and take care.
You too. Have a great day, Kate.
You too. Mike Gifford, CEO of Vivant Health, which provides HIV care and prevention at a dozen locations in Wisconsin, Colorado, Missouri, Texas. Coming up, we talk with a Milwaukee alderman who represents the Sherman Park neighborhood about the civil demonstrations and unrest in the city following the death of George Floyd. That's right after this news update here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A quick signpost here. WPR has put together a hive of pandemic-related articles, data, analysis. It's all at WPR.org/COVID. And at our website, you can sign up for daily newsletters to get the top stories we're following each day. That's WPR.org. Right now, we're talking about police brutality, racial injustice, and the looting and vandalism of dozens of Milwaukee businesses in the wake of the Memorial Day death of George Floyd in Minneapolis. Some of the damaged businesses are in the Sherman Park neighborhood and other areas of Milwaukee's north side. Have you been part of the protests? Have you seen the businesses that have been damaged in Milwaukee? Do you have flashbacks to the uprising in anger after the death of Sylville Smith in 2016 and the riots in Sherman Park? Let's talk about it. 800-642-1234. Khalif Rainey is a Milwaukee alderman representing the 7th District, which includes the Sherman Park neighborhood. Khalif, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
What are your thoughts right now with the protests, the civil unrest, the death of George Floyd?
You know, it's as if we have returned to where we never left. You know, if you look at the speech and the remarks I made that night at Sherman Park, you know, it's interesting. I posted it on social media, and a lot of people thought that I was actually speaking to what was going on, you know, today. And you know, it just highlights the perpetual instability that we are continuously in here in Milwaukee, here in America, you know, as a result of, you know, inequality, as a result of injustice. You know, and until we rectify that, until we figure out as Americans, you know, just not black people, but white people, all of us together, figure out how we improve that, we're gonna continue to see incidents like this reoccurring.
How is Sherman Park holding up right now?
You know, Sherman Park is holding up, you know, as it relates to this particular, you know, incident. The difference is it wasn't as concentrated, you know, in one particular area. You know, this situation started on King Drive and it evolved and expanded, you know, from what I hear to 102nd Street here in the city of Milwaukee. So it wasn't an issue that, you know, Sherman Park in particular had to own. This is something that, you know, it's transpiring across the entire nation. You know, people are taking to the streets and they're objecting, you know, to what they've witnessed. And I think it's not just what occurred in Minneapolis with George Floyd. You know, I think it's more of a reflection of the frustration and the exhaustion of people with having to witness this. Like, I think it's really to the point now where humanity is beginning to realize we have to come together.
How have you seen the coming together? Is it happening where you are? Are you seeing any glimmers of hope?
I mean, I think when you take a look at the protests, you know, nationwide, I saw New Zealand, you know, yesterday. I saw Paris, you know, and I see here in America, you know, this situation has superseded, you know, gender, you know, race, you know, class. It's like people really are tired of this. You know what I mean? Like, we cannot be at our best as a country as long as we're doing this. You know what I mean? So I think it's to the point where everyone is like, you know, they're showing their colors. Like either you're fighting for a change, or, you know, as you can see, there's some out there to cause confusion. And, you know, it's an amazing time. It's an amazing time to actually witness. I don't know if you ever have experienced something like this, but it's a lot going on in America right now.
Have you been out to the protests?
You know, it's interesting that you asked that. And I was speaking to some of my colleagues today about going out there. I've yet to go out, you know, to thus far. But the most interesting thing about that is, like, we're experiencing the pandemic, and these riots that are reoccurring, this damage that's reoccurring nightly. But it's also in the midst of a global health pandemic with COVID. And yesterday I was speaking to some healthcare providers at Ascension, and, you know, they anticipate within 2 weeks we may even see a spike, you know, in COVID here in the city of Milwaukee as a result of these protests. So it's a lot of dynamics are at play, you know, and I just hope that people are doing the best they can to remain safe while they're out there.
It's hard to social distance, though. It's hard to social distance when there are thousands of people congregating together with one voice.
Absolutely. And I think that further demonstrates the magnitude of objection that people have towards what they saw. They're coming out the house like in the midst of a pandemic, like, no more. We're coming out. We're risking our lives. And I think that's something that, you know, the history books is going to have to highlight. It's like, again, it's a truly amazing time.
Khalif Rainey is with us, Milwaukee alderman representing the 7th District on the city's northwest side. You can join in. Do you live in Milwaukee? How have you been expressing yourself since the death of George Floyd? Why do you think there have been protests? And what do you want to see change? What should happen next? We're at 800-642-1234. Email your thoughts to ideas@wpr.org. Khalif, I want to ask you about evictions in particular. The state's coronavirus-related moratorium on evictions expired late last month. You asked the governor to consider a modest reinstatement of the order. What are you asking for?
Well, in that letter to the governor, I request that they re-implement eviction moratorium. And I did that simply because the program, the rent assistance program that the governor is launching, it does not actually become available to the public until June 8th. So in between when the moratorium expired and in between now and when the actual program launches, that situation is leaving a lot of people vulnerable to eviction. A lot of good people who have been furloughed or saw reduced time or work schedule with their employer. You know, a lot of people have been left vulnerable to that. And I know that there were landlords eager to put people out in the street. So it was concerning. I thought, considering the eviction crisis we're already experiencing here in Milwaukee, we could only further exacerbate that problem. And what sense does it make to have a stay-at-home order while we're evicting people on the streets? I just thought it made good sense for that. Those two programs, that program, the rent assistance program, and the expiration of the moratorium, those two things should have synced together.
What is the status?
Well, the eviction moratorium has expired. According to the governor, they could not reinstitute it because it must be accompanied with the public health order. So the stay-at-home order and the eviction moratorium, they must, you know, coexist, and that wasn't the case. As you noted, the Supreme Court overturned the stay-at-home order, so yeah, they were unable to reinstitute that. I don't know how many people have been evicted thus far. We'll see what those numbers look like in the near future.
Well, in a typical year in Milwaukee County, there are about 14,000 evictions filed. That's according to the Legal Action Wisconsin. Have you been talking with landlords about this? What are they saying in your district?
You know, it's interesting. We have issues here in the city of Milwaukee with, at times, even identify who the actual owner of property is. So we had to actually create policy to determine, like, who is the individuals that are behind these LLCs and such who are hiding the identity of landlords. So, you know, it's issues on top of issues. And I just believe that if we had extended that eviction moratorium up until the day the program launched, it just made more sense.
Mm. Let's take a call now. Andrew is with us from Wales. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, how are you guys doing this morning?
Doing okay.
Wonderful. I just wanted to call in and comment on what your guest had mentioned about it not being, with regard to police brutality, necessarily a white-only or a black-only or a Hispanic-only issue. And I agree 100% because on an annual basis, there are lots of whites, lots of blacks, and lots of Hispanics that are killed by police. And I think it ties back to the way that the police are trained. Just as a kind of anecdotal evidence, my wife was pulled over, and we happen to be Caucasian. She was pulled over for not having a front license plate on her car, and the police officer came up to her car with his hand on his gun, you know, ready to pull it in the event that anything happened. And I think that police are unfortunately trained to kind of have a shoot first, ask questions later, and be on edge about everything as simple as, you know, a license plate stop. And I think it comes back to the way that police are trained is what has to be changed.
Andrew, thank you for sharing your situation. Khalif, what about the training of police? What could you add?
You know, I definitely believe this. We're going to see some reforms across the country. You know, I think when you reflect on the riots that occurred in 1968 after the death of Martin Luther King, it was about 110 cities in the country that began rioting. And within 6 days, we had the Civil Rights Act of 1968. I think that what the people are doing right now across the world, they're pushing government. They're letting them know that we need to see some changes. I think we're going to see reforms in, you know, many of the practices associated with our law enforcement in this country.
But that takes a lot of time.
It does. But I must say this. You know, we really look at the root cause of all of these issues is poverty. You know, what George Floyd was doing was trying to pass off a $20 bill at a local store. Right. So at the end of the day, it's such a multifaceted issue. To say that the answer is to reform the police department, and that's only a part, it's only a fraction of the issues. You know, you got to look at housing and this instability, the education, the employment. You know, these are all things that I discuss, and it ultimately is the deferred maintenance on the quality of life for African Americans in this city here in Milwaukee in particular, but throughout this country. You know, so to just marginalize this issue to law enforcement, it's about so much more than that.
Milwaukee Alderman Khalif Rainey is with us as we talk about the protests, the civil unrest in the wake of George Floyd's killing in Minneapolis. What are your thoughts on why civil unrest turns into looting? How do you think Milwaukee and Wisconsin and America can begin to root out the systematic and institutional racism? What actions will you take? What is the path forward for you personally? Still time to talk about this. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Alderman Rainey right here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Protests are entering their ninth day across the country over the death of George Floyd, an unarmed black man at the hands of police in Minneapolis. One former officer was charged with third-degree murder and manslaughter. Protesters believe the charge isn't harsh enough. We're checking in on the Sherman Park neighborhood of Milwaukee that was rocked by the fatal police shooting of 23-year-old Sylville Smith in 2016. It led to days of riots. Do you live in Milwaukee? How are you processing Floyd's death and the role of police officers in your community, in your neighborhood? Still time for you, 800-642-1234. Alderman Khalif Rainey stays with us. Let's bring in Nancy now, joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Nancy.
Hello. I live in Sherman Park in Milwaukee, and I'm calling to say that for decades and decades and decades, Milwaukee police and fire were required to live within the city limits. Several years ago, the Wisconsin legislature decided that that was too confining for them, and they shouldn't be the only city, the only city in Wisconsin that did require the city limit residency. So that was removed. And now I do believe that when fire and police are allowed to live outside the city, they take their allegiance with them. So now when they are called back into the city for any reason at all, they see Milwaukee City residents as adversaries. Their allegiance has been transferred with their bodies to whatever town, city, or little hamlet they now live.
Nancy, let's get Alderman Rainey's reaction to that.
Man, Nancy, thank you for those thoughts. I think that you raise a very valid point. I think often when that particular item is discussed, it's talked about in a financial way, you know, because it's also a financial impact by paying individuals who live outside of your community. That also drains your tax dollars as well. But I think you raise a very valid point. You know, you have officers who, you know, live outside of the city of Milwaukee, you know, and before they clock in, they've been playing Call of Duty all day. You know, and now they want to go reenact that. You know, they want to come to a community they are not familiar with. They're not ingrained in. You know, they have no relationship. They see the people of Milwaukee as enemy combatants. And I think that's what we see playing out often, not only with shootings, but just the everyday interaction between the public and law enforcement. Something that, you know, really makes the public feel as though they're living in a police state.
Nancy, have you been a longtime resident of the Sherman Park neighborhood?
45 years.
How have you seen it change in those decades?
I've seen it change because even as a white woman, I have had problems with the city police department. I had the occasion to call the police to my house, actually, because I had a need to have the water valve in my basement turned on. I had turned it off because of a leak. And so, I'm 88 years old. When I went down into the basement to turn this valve back on again, my hand had swelled up and I couldn't do it. So at 2 o'clock in the morning, I called the police department and they sent two officers. One went down into the basement, turned on the water valve, and that's all I needed. I just needed them to turn the valve on and leave. And instead, the other one stole my house keys and my garage door opener. And my life has been a living hell since. This is not necessarily a black and white thing. This is police force in Milwaukee.
Nancy, I want Alderman Rainey there to respond, because, you know, that sounds like a situation. We can't verify what happened, what Nancy is saying, but it sounds like, you know, Nancy is saying that she wanted a simple thing done and that there was a lot of extra baggage that went with it.
Yeah, I think, you know, being a police officer, it has a lot to do with providing customer service. You know, these are taxpayers. These are the people who are paying your salary, you know, and they want to see a return on their investment. You know, so when they interact with the police and they don't feel as though they're embraced or that their concerns are welcome or even attempted to be resolved, you know, that creates disdain, and that just further widens the gap between the public and the police department.
Alderman, what do you make of the looting, the destruction of businesses?
You know, one of the businesses that was damaged in Sherman Park was the pastry shop, Reynolds Pastry Shop, on the corner of 35th and Burlock, 35th and Fond du Lac. You know, it just really weakens the plight, a very righteous cause that, you know, people are out here putting their life on the line in hopes of accomplishing. You know, when you put those elements together, it just really discredits a righteous cause. But I will say this, as you've seen around the country, there have been provocateurs, there have been people who have been identified to be part of law enforcement, white individuals who are coming and breaking glass and burning police cars, providing fireworks and explosives to individuals on the ground in different communities. So, as again, I say that it's a very bizarre time, and I think we're witnessing something that we have never witnessed before. And I think when we reflect and look in hindsight and see exactly what occurred, it's going to be amazing when the smoke clears.
Talking with Khalif Rainey, Milwaukee Alderman representing the 7th District on the city's northwest side. Let's take another call now. Joel is joining us from Spooner. Hi, Joel.
Yeah, hi. I just want to make a really quick comment. on the comments that the alderman just made about how officers that live outside of the area would be playing Call of Duty and wanting to go into Milwaukee and areas like that with ill intent. Is that's part of the problem that's going on right now, and part some of the rhetoric that is causing more problems. We don't need that type of talk. That does not happen, and if it does, that gets weeded out of the mix, or at least it should get weeded out of the mix before it even thinks to become a problem. So we don't need talk like that. We need love, and we need respect between the population and the police departments and the law enforcement.
Joel, thank you for that call. Alderman Rainey.
I mean, the reality of the situation is the city of Milwaukee is bleeding millions and millions of dollars in lawsuits and payouts because of wrong activities by the police department. And that's prior to, you know, this occurrence. You know, it's always easy to say, you know, hey, let's allow cooler heads to prevail. But no one is saying that while we have situations like Sterling Brown, while we have situations like Derek Williams, while we have these situations like Dontre Hamilton. You know, again, you know, my desire is not to be divisive, but we have to be honest. You know, we have to be honest about what's going on here in our community and in our country. If we really want to resolve it. And I think you even see that. You see atonement from police officers from around the country. They're coming in there kneeling. Let's be honest. Let's look at the situation for it is. It's time for atonement, and it's time to move forward and heal. But we can't do that without being honest.
When you see the National Guard called into communities, what do you make of that?
Well, the National Guard was, you know, already here. You know, they were here for the elections. They were here for COVID. You know, so the National Guard was here and they were on call. You know, and that's even interesting. You know, I think it's needed. You know, in many ways, it's been a lot of damage, and it's been seeming as if it's continuing to flow. So, you know, I hope that cooler heads prevail. I hope that we figure out how to take our anger and our energy and use it in a productive way. You know, damaging our community and damaging businesses of people who have given the blood, sweat, and tears, you know, to actually see that thing come together, you know, that's not the right approach. We need to be committed to justice. We need to be committed to the long haul, making sure that we improve policy and we get accountability from law enforcement.
What keeps you up at night right now?
Wow, so many things, right? You know, it's like COVID is still a major issue. I think right now over 100,000 people in America have died. That's an issue that African-American people here in this country have been bearing the brunt of. Here in Sherman Park, you know, we were originally one of the hot spots for COVID. And so you have that in the midst of all of this. So, again, you know, I can only say, like, you know, we're in the midst of one truly amazing moments in American history.
Khalif, thank you for joining us. Take care.
Thank you.
Khalif Rainey, a Milwaukee alderman representing the 7th District on the city's northwest side. Just ahead, we'll check in with the leaders in the faith community about their feelings on reopening their houses of worship and their thoughts on solidarity with other religions during the pandemic. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.